Hi, I'm Jim Rattigan, and I'm here today to talk to you guys about the vectorizer that we just did for Dev 11. Some of you may have seen me before. I was wrangled in the halls by Charles, and we did a short 20-minute video at the whiteboard. And they just caught me in the hall, and we started to go to the whiteboard and talk about parts of the vectorizer. But this is a chance to actually start what I would consider to be an end part series, where we drill down and we start to talk about some of the details in the data structures, some of the theory that we use for doing the dependence analysis, some of the hardware details to understand what we're targeting actually, and just some good old engineering folklore for what it was like to bring a vectorizer up and compile Windows. So here we go. This is the Visual C++ compiler, Dev 11. I'm a developer on the team. And one of the things that I wanted to first focus on is when we develop, we have to deal with an enormous amount of code to just be able to get the initial framework up and running and prove correctness. So we have to build and boot three flavors of Windows 8, two flavors of SQL, and then three flavors of Office. And for us, correctness and then compile time come before anything else, before performance, before any of the features that we would like to support for language extensions or any of the other problems that come up during debugger scenarios. So this makes it really, really difficult to move the technology, but we just did, and I think we moved it in this release more than we've moved the compiler in many other releases. So new to this release, in the back end, we were able to multi-thread the back end so that when you do a full whole program analysis and run LTCG, you've got as many cores as possible compiling functions. And we'll talk a little bit later about why that parallelism is restricted and it becomes unrealistic at a certain point. But for now, the speed-ups for really large binaries that were compiled LTCG or link time code generation are pretty big. We now have the auto vectorizer on by default as well as auto parallelization. We target ARM x86 and x64. We have the AVX instruction set under development right now. We just didn't make it in time, and I'll talk about that later. We have the auto parallelization on by default, as well as pragma-based, which is the only practical way to do that for non-obvious cases where the loops are not completely compute-bound. We've also brought up a production ARM compiler for all of Windows 8 and for all of the applications for the new Windows runtime. And we've also got a C++ devirtualization feature. And we also have, I would say, three key WinRT optimizations in the compiler for Dev 11. So here we're going to focus just as a brief overview of the vectorizer. And the key point, of course, is that this is platform independent. So we can target the vectorizer at ARM, x86, x64, and some other architectures, and a huge part of it's machine independent. And I wanted to first start out with a really simple demo. We picked this demo because it was obviously parallel and very easy to vectorize. And this is C++ only. I think you guys may have seen this done on a GPU with the C++ AMP demos. They blow this one out of the water, but I just wanted to show you what we've done because it gives you a relative feel of how much we've sped the compiler up for Dev 11. So that's the in-body simulation, and it's running with the Dev 10 compiler, and then that's where we speed it up with PPL. So you're not getting any vectorization on a core, but then we split this across eight cores. And so that's a relative feeling of performance for you. Now, this is what it's going to look like. That's with vectorization on one core, and it's already noticeably faster than the Dev 10. And then that's with vectorization and the auto parallelization, and you can see the speed ups. So when this hits, it's really, really impactful, and that just gives you a feeling of what the change can be. And I'm going to drill into now what the punchline is for that demo, is that that's just the unaltered C++ that we compiled using the compiler we're about to ship. As you can see, there are a lot of non-obvious things to vectorize in here. Some of them are these data structures that are not good old-fashioned Fortran arrays, and a lot of these are what we would traditionally call reductions. And so this is a pretty busy loop. And this is a great intro to the style of code that we will be vectorizing throughout the rest of the presentation. But this is a chance to finally break into what is vectorization. So this is the only picture that I could come up with that would be an easy way for some people to grasp the concept. If this is an ordinary x86 machine, you operate on two 32-bit operands, you would add them, and you'd put them back in a register. So that's the instruction that you would think of conceptually for what we call a scalar machine or a scalar operation. That's one operation at a time or per clock. So the idea with vectors is that the registers contain many operands, and the vector operations occur simultaneously on all of them. So if you did a vector add between two vector operands, you might be able to do four or eight things at a time. And so what we do in the compiler then is we try to find ways to look across loop iterations to be able to do that many things at once per clock cycle. So the way to look at it then at the assembly language level is this is an add pack single between the two XMM registers, 1 and 0. And so for SSE2, what you get now is basically four operands at a time. So you would load this register, load that register, then you would do the add, and then this, of course, would be the destination, which would contain the final result. So you, in one clock cycle, you've done four adds. What's really great, though, is that this is compounded by the vector units being superscalar, and also they are duplicated on each of the cores, so you get additional speedups, but we'll get to that in the next presentation. So given that one instruction that you saw for the vector add, this would be sort of what you would look for mapping a simple vector add loop to. You would load the register, load the other register, add, and then do the move back. And that's exactly the assembly language we would emit, but that we would also unroll this loop probably. But just for the purposes of this intro, this loop would be vectorized, and basically you cut the iteration by four. So when it hits, it's a big speed up. So we also had a demo that Intel gave us the source code for, which is really great, which is that we took the sunset demo and we used the sine wave to actually draw the ocean, and we got the library functions for sine, cosine, and tangent vectorized, and they're going to be in addition to the math libraries for us. So the compiler can actually target vectorized transcendental functions and speed a lot of things up as well. In this particular case, we vectorized this loop that contained a sine and sine operation, and then parallelized it, and I'll show you that in a second. So that's sort of a simplified version of what that loop looks like. And what we'll show is both of these statements get vectorized, but using the hardware and a library. So abstractly, what you're looking at here is we want to turn that into 4 at a time equals load 4 of a time, add 4, load 4. And then the second one, what we want to do is we want to target the short vector math library. And the short vector math library operates on pointers into the array. And this has been hand-coded to fully optimize the ability to do 4 sign calculations as fast as possible, as though it were an extension for the hardware. So what happens then is the add will map onto a hardware instruction, and then the compiler will emit the sign call to the library as though it were the hardware, but it's really software. So what we've done is we've extended also the vector instruction set with a lot of software and libraries. So then one of the other things that we've added is parallelization. And it's on by default. If this loop is completely compute bound, then the parallelizer will kick in and parallelize for you if you actually throw the qPAR switch. But we've also introduced an incredibly simple pragma, so that if you want to actually parallelize that loop, you can give us a hint and you can tell us how many cores you want to spread that across. Now, what's good about this implementation or this view from the language is that this really is a hint. And what we will do in the compiler is we'll analyze that loop body and we'll make sure that it's safe to actually parallelize instead of actually just doing it. So we'll actually look at the pointers, we'll look at whether or not the procedure calls that were contained in the loop would actually escape any of the pointers and create artificial race conditions. And it's a much safer way to try to actually introduce parallelism. And it's not much of a change to the language. You don't have to do anything except for take your existing C++ and put a pragma on there as a hint. So one of the other things that we were able to do is then with the parallelism, we were able to target some of the huge machines that we have for precursors to what would be happening, say, a year out from now or maybe 2 years. So this was done on a 40-core machine. We were able to take this ray tracing demo, and with the Dev10 compiler, this ball just barely moves. But because we were able to auto-vectorize this and then auto-parallelize it on a 40-core machine, this ball actually bounces up and down as though you were dribbling a basketball. And it's really an impressive speed-up. All right, so I'm going to show you the demo then. What I'm going to do is first show you the demo with the Dev10 compiler and then with the Dev11 compiler. O2 means that we're going to actually kick in the vectorizer, and then on top of that, we'll parallelize this. So I'm just going to cut for a minute to the machine. And so this is that's the ball bouncing at about 3.5 frames per second with one core using the Dev10 compiler. And then what we do is we shift this to be parallelized at the C source level, and it runs about that fast. Then what we can do is show the improvements with the Dev11 compiler. And already you can see the ball bouncing a little bit faster. That's where it's been vectorized and it's running on one core. And then what we do is we kick in the parallelism. And as you can see, that's finally really, really moving. And that's just to give you a real sense of the speed ups. And then to give you a sense of the processor utilization, there's an example of the 40 cores all firing, and as you can see, the CPU usage is almost at 100%, and all of the CPUs are being fully utilized, and there's the memory usage. So that was considered a big success, and that was one of the things that inspired us then to really get this into the Dev11 compiler for general purpose, and that what happened early on. This is literally the code that sped that demo up. And if you note, it's got a lot of bitwise operations with scalar constants, with shift operations. And this code gets vectorized and parallelized completely unaltered. And it got that much of a speed up. And it was spread across that many cores just with one switch at the command line. So to be clear, the code here was altered with a pragma, and then we had to add the switch qpar to tell the compiler to parallelize the loop, but the vectorizer is on by default. So really, what you can see then is, if you had a four-core machine, you have a scalar unit and a vector unit. And this is an overall view conceptually of how much horsepower now you get on a CPU. Literally, everybody has had a mental model of in Dev 10 of just a scalar unit and that being reproduced and four times across the chip, and then using either OpenMP or our PPL library or several other ways to parallelize this. But this time, what we've done is we've exposed fully the vector units through C++ in a natural way that is basically, you don't have to change anything, but you will have to probably generate a log file occasionally to tune and find out whether or not the vectorizer's kicked in for more complex loops than the ones that I've just shown in these I call them cherry demos. So the punchline here is that if you were to look at it from a hardware point of view, between what the compiler is exploiting for Dev 10 versus what the compiler exploits for Dev 11, this is a great graphic. And so that blue box is what you can look at as the scalar unit on the hardware. And not drawn to scale, that's the vector unit, and that wasn't being used, and that wasn't being lit up by the compiler at all until Dev 11. And so a lot of this real estate was only accessible through the XMM intrinsics and a hand coding or assembly language. So now the C++ compiler lights up a lot more hardware, and that gets compounded then if you actually try and look at a four-core chip. You could make the argument that in Dev 10, the compiler was only hitting that one part of the CPU. And now, with the multiple cores, the parallelism, and the vectorizer, basically, we're lighting up that much hardware for you. And that's a big deal. That really, when that hits, that really speeds things up. Now, the point is that we're hitting the current hardware, and what I want to talk about is the importance of the vectorizer and automatic parallelization, because the hardware companies are really pushing this technology. The key point to look at here is that basically this is it's a six core chip. It's close to 4 gigahertz at peak clock rates. It's got a 15 megabyte on chip cache, and it supports 128-bit vector instructions and 256-bit vector instructions, and that is an enormous amount of horsepower in a small chip, and it's really the compiler's responsibility to exploit that, and that's what that's the long road that we've started down for Dev 11. So there's the six cores, 15 megabytes, the vector instructions, and that's where we are sort of on the processor roadmap. we are now by default generating the 128-bit SSE instructions, and it was a really long and arduous task to get that on by default for all of the software in the company and all of the applications that we built, and the compiler proving its correctness at least with enough bake time for us to actually go public. And I would say at least 6 to 7 months of constantly building real-world code and just doing the checks to see that we were vectorizing the right loops and we were actually in the stress labs with all these applications getting the right answers. But we have a long way to go. So right now, Ivy Bridge has just been released, and you can see as Intel marches the manufacturing process along, we're going to wind up with more and more cores, more and more hardware to instruction sets to exploit. Haswell is going to show up with some, which Intel has just made public, some really great new instruction set extensions. And also they're going to have 256-bit AVX2 instructions, which pull out the left-hand side as an operand and allow the compiler even more freedom to make sure that we really manage the ports on the CPU for maximum utilization and to reduce the amount of contention. And this is a roadmap that we're fully aware of, and a lot of work is already in flight, and we're just beginning to turn that stuff on internally. And this also leads to a new release model that we want to do, which is to be able to release the compiler at a cadence that's far less than a year and have the correctness there. And so what we've done internally is we've started a process where we basically develop the compiler at RTM quality. So every check-in has to build and boot Windows and run stress. And that's what's going to allow us to improve the cadence. But we're not exactly sure what the release dates will be, but we plan to enhance, once you get on the Dev 11 compiler train, we plan to enhance that and provide releases to keep up with the hardware that's being released. So this was a slide deck that I had from an internal presentation, and there's a lot of people that know about vector technology from the past. They have seen it. It came out of the Fortran days, and so clearly this is C++. So one of the ways I handled this in the audience was to basically guess what the question would be and then put it on a slide. And so I'm going to give you an example of a loop that's written in C++ that's really, really complex to give you a flavor of how general purpose we can make the vectorizer. But this is not your grandfather's vectorizer. We'll actually take this loop right here, and you can see there's an awful lot of control flow, which is in the red and the blue. There are some scalar variables here that are not arrays. And it's nested inside another loop, and it's got a lot of complex pointers that are passed in for these array bounds. And we'll actually vectorize this loop. One of the things that's interesting is that this is all integer code, too. There's no floating point here at all. This is the key inner loop for the DNA sequencing program. I believe it's called Hummer. And so we're going to go through this in an animated way just to show you some of the complexities of what the compiler does to vectorize this. I'm not going to complete it, but this should give you an idea about how general the technology can be. So what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the inner loop, because for Dev 11 what we're doing is releasing inner loop vectorization only. And that in and of itself was hard enough, especially when you consider this to be one of the inner loops that you tackle. So what's going to be interesting is you can begin to see that because of the white space, I've broken this loop body up into three separate sections. And really what that corresponds to is a back edge dependency here where this is written in red on a previous iteration. So right away, that is a portion of this loop which can't be legally vectorized. And this is a great example of something that I want to talk about later on, which is the theory of data dependency analysis. But this back edge is a great way of splitting the loop right here and turning this into three loops. So now what I can do is I can feed this and this and this all through the vectorizer and see if we can actually partially vectorize this. Now, one of the things, let me go back here. One of the things that the this is a scalar optimization that we have in the compiler anyway today, which if you note, the induction variable here is K and the upper bound is M. And so this wraps the entire body of this new loop. And so if we just rewrite the loop itself, we can get rid of this branch. And so that's in fact what we do. And then if you'll notice, we have we have eight different if statements in here, and the vector units are not easily, we can't target the vector units if there's a lot of control flow in the loop. And so there are two general ways of addressing that. One is to recognize idioms like min and max, or to do this other transformation, which is more general purpose, which is called bit masking. And both of those I'll explain in more detail later. But right now, what's important for this demo is that we're going to try to exploit the min and max vector instructions that are in the hardware that are part of the SSE 4.2 instruction set, which we also target. But what we do is it's not by default. It's under a runtime check to make sure that you have the hardware to support that. And I'll show that in this animation. But right now, you can sort of get an idea that that's going to be a max. So is this. So is that. All the red ones. And so what's interesting is if we can, in the compiler, recognize this general form from that much more complex if, then we could possibly map that onto a machine instruction if the machine actually has that instruction, which 4.2 does. So what that would look like is a packed max of two registers. So we would load A, load B, issue the paired max, and the hardware literally puts the max in each one of these result registers. So you get four max calculations per iteration of the loop, of the new vectorized loop. So what happens then is the vectorizer translates that into an internal representation that looks like it's completely flatline code for each one of the loop bodies. And now you can see that this would probably naturally vectorize. What we do is we come back out for this loop with conditional moves. We vectorize that guy, and we vectorize that guy. So this is sort of a PowerPoint slide representation of what we do for emitting runtime checks before this loop. What we'll do is we'll check the C library when it comes up, sets a global variable to see if an instruction set is available. It sets the ISA availability global variable. The compiler interops with that and emits code to check to see whether or not SSE2 is available. And then every one of these base array bases that come in are passed in. So what we have to do is we emit a whole bunch of code before this loop to do what we call runtime alias checks. And we'll actually see whether or not any of the writes in this loop, like for example, whether or not the write to DC could possibly write to IP, or whether the write to IC could possibly write to MP. And because the machines are all superscalar, introducing these runtime checks at the top of the loop is really, really a small hit because they get initiated really, really early, maybe about 53 micro operations outside the window before we even start this. And so that little hit there for latency to start this gets amortized tremendously by the speed ups that you get here. And this gets multiplied by the loop that then wraps this itself. And so what happens then is if this check fails, you'll fall through and go back to the original loop, which we don't alter. And then that allows us to innovate and, in other words, generate two version code that will hit the 4.2 instruction set. And people that don't have that will hit the SSE2 on most of the other codes that we can vectorize. And we can talk about in the next thing too the trade-offs between the code size here and the speed-ups that we get, and also all of the data that we collected and the tuning we did to make sure that when we grow the code size, it really is for an enormous win. So one of the other things too that we didn't get a chance to go to, but I wanted to talk about because it's part of vectorization, is the ability to handle nested control flow, which is going to be one of the early updates that we send out there. This is a great example of integer code. This is pulled out of the numerical recipes, where if you vectorize this, you'll note that that's control flow and that's control flow. So by the time you're down here evaluating these, what you've got is two bit masks. And we have the code to do this in development right now. It's just that we haven't had a chance to fully bake it. And I'm only showing this because I want to actually touch on this in some of the next presentations, because vectorizing control flow is really, really critical for a lot of things. But it can get very, very complex. And it's, I think, an interesting part of the next series that we're going to talk about. And this is a great slide then that shows control flow in a loop that in a place that's a little bit more common, where people can look at spec2k6 in libquantum and really look at vectorizing this as a great introduction into all of the complex technologies that we have to do to actually get this. So clearly there are two if statements here, so we've got to be able to do the bit masking. And then one of the things to note is that this array reference that's in here and here and here is based on this form, which is a pointer, and being able to parse that C structure in and of itself was a major investment, and it's representative of a lot of the work that we did. There's probably at least a man year of being able to take this array structure and getting it into a form where we could do regular data dependency analysis, and I'll actually talk about that. So in the end, we do the bit masking, we parse this, we pull these two control variables into one if, and then pull them out of the loop, set them up as a vector, and then vectorize this whole loop. And the speedups for this that we measured are about 20%. So that's about the end of what I wanted to do for a first initial overview of the vectorizer. The intent here is to give you an idea of all the things that we've done for Dev 11 and to set this up as a beginning for probably the next N series to talk about dependence analysis, the data structures that we did in the compiler to do that, a lot of the stuff that went into, or not stuff, the engineering that went into being able to take C++ constructs in the compiler and convert them back into regular shaped array references that we could actually do the mathematical analysis for the dependence analysis. And then a lot of the re-engineering that we did in the compiler for being able to do the analysis for whether or not things were a loop that we could actually rewrite in a vector form. So with that, I hope that that was enough of an introduction to provide a lead-in for the next maybe 3 or 4 talks, and I hope to see you then. But I have to go back and code. There's a series of deadlines that we have to meet for Win8 that are still in flight. So thanks for your time, and hope to see you later. Bye.